You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike Exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall President and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
Well, here we are, show number 147, middle of June of 2024. We better put the year in there because, you know, in the future, people could be listening to this.
That's right.
On Buzzsprout or...
After 3 years, we need to start dating them.
We should. JR and I were talking about trying to go back and archive all this stuff that we've done, 147 shows, and it's a lot to it.
Yeah. we'll have to talk about the hours involved in that.
Oh, see, I knew that was coming.
That's the bottom line.
Somebody's always looking for a raise, right?
No, just more money. It doesn't have to be more per hour.
Not a raise, just more money.
Yeah, more money. It's the same thing, right? Welcome to the show, though. Beautiful sunny day here. We've had some terrible heat wave in this part of the world for this part of the time of the year. Normally it's August when we get this stuff, but it was 105 and I was digging a ditch out in the backyard. So no. Not going to do that anymore. But we've got an amazing sales week last week.
Yes.
It was really impressive. And of course, the consignments have come down to a trickle for some reason. So if you've got a great car, it's a perfect time to bring it. We're not going to, Steve, praying no more car shows. For those of you who don't know, Steve writes all of our descriptions.
I just need a week off, you know, just a week of no cars.
No.
No, we're not going to do it. Keep bringing them.
Come on. Keep bringing them. We need them all that we
beautiful
can get.
Buick GS out there, by the way.
Yeah,
455.
Yeah, that's a really, really nice car. And where did we sell cars this past week, you say?
Correct.
How about New York Mills, Minnesota, Westbury, New York, Green Lane, Pennsylvania, Williamsport, Pennsylvania, Quakertown, Pennsylvania, Moton, Pennsylvania, Easton, Maryland, York, Pennsylvania, Richland, Michigan, Shelbyville, Delaware, Dover, Delaware, Valley Center, California, wherever that is, Carrollton, Texas, Beverly Hills, California, Levittown, Pennsylvania, Nashville, Tennessee, Willow Street, Pennsylvania, Las Vegas, Nevada, Salisbury, North Carolina, Spring City, Pennsylvania, Sykesville, Maryland, Millersville, Maryland, Churchville, Pennsylvania, and Glassboro, New Jersey.
You know, Moton is not far from here, right?
It's not.
And there's got to be a million cars in Moton, hidden away at Moton, because we get a lot of consignments from Moton and a lot of sales in Moton.
Pottstown and Moton seem to be our biggest area that's right around here.
Amazing.
That's close to us. So why? I don't know.
I did notice a new arrival, too, on the way to the rest stop, let's call it. Beautiful 66 or 7 El Camino, red, black.
That's a nice car that just came in, and we'll talk about that on our new inventory segment next week, or maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I don't even know where we're at. We're close. We're 900 and I think 23 in inventory.
I would have guessed 923, yeah.
Well, good thing that you're so...
Didn't ask me this week.
Yeah, well, I've learned, you know, it only took me 13 weeks to learn my lesson, and I ask you how many you think we have in inventory.
You know, but I've said nothing moves more than a car dealer's inventory than a pet store, maybe. It's the only one where the inventory moves more. It's always in flux.
Yeah, that's true, and we'll write that down for further discussion. We have gotten, like we said, some great cars in. Some of the new arrivals this week, the 1955 Buick Series 40 Riviera hardtop. That's the longest name on one. Dover white and turquoise over gray and black. Oh, Dover white.
That's
Frame off restored, 264 nail head, Dynaflow 2-speed automatic, and the chrome on this thing is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, the level that someone did to this car is probably they spent way more than the car is actually worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens from time to time. People get caught up in the moment or price is not the issue. They're just looking to create a memory, something that granddad had or dad had or whatever. So it's one of those cars that you don't see them bringing high dollar,
right?
Even when they're as nicely restored as this one. But the love and the effort and all that is certainly appreciated. 1970 Chevrolet El Camino SS, the Tribute, the black one. Have you seen this one?
I've seen them all.
You can't be looking through your phone.
I gotta
that one. 454, black over black, just a nicely done tribute. It's got the aluminum heads. or as the British say, aluminium, and the 12-bolt rear, and it's just a real, really well-done tribute. And it's nice to see these tributes because not everybody can afford a true SS, you know, 396 El Camino or Chevelle or Camaro or any of those General Motors products that had those because they have gotten pricey.
They are.
I mean, a 396 true SS El Camino is probably 60, 70, maybe even higher, depending on the level of restoration. And you know, it's just supply and demand, it seems to be. There's so many more people in this world that are becoming a part of this hobby that they just keep, you know, that drives the prices up.
Yep.
And if, you know, everybody, how many cars do we have that we sell that we get 10 more phone calls in the next week that we've had nothing on for, you know, 3 months? And then all of a sudden everybody wants
it. It's weird
car.
How that happens, actually.
It happens a little bit more than normal. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, the 70 Chevelle or El Camino, great car. The 68 Dodge Coronet RT hardtop tribute. This one, sublime green over black.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 440. Man, this thing is so cool looking.
That thing, is cool,
It doesn't stand out much in that sublime. I think if you're a shy person, it probably would not be the color that you would pick for the car. But this one has got also that electronic fuel injection that they put on that looks kind of like a carburetor.
Oh, right.
And has made fuel injection accessible to a lot more people. And, you know, granted, listen, not everybody wants to rebuild a carburetor. They're not they're not always fun. They're a little too intricate for me.
Right. This makes it a lot easier to start the car.
Starting the car. As long as you don't pump the crap out
of it. That's right. Don't flood it.
Well, that was the problem with fuel injected cars back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
People were so used to getting in the car and pumping the gas, you know, 20 times that the car had been sitting for a week. And that's the worst thing to do for a fuel injected car. It'll make it not want to start. And so that's, and a lot of people just ripped off that fuel injection and put a four barrel on it. And, and then, of course, the fuel injections became, you know, the unit themselves became very valuable.
Right.
And still are. I mean, you know, to find an original one from back in the day, a Rochester fuel injection unit that would be correct for the car that you're restoring, I bet you can pay $8,000 or $10,000
wow.
for that.
Is that right?
Yeah. And because people didn't think about collectability and values back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
of course,
all of a sudden you got this big hunk of iron sitting there and you go, well, we don't need that. Throw that in the trash or whatever.
In a box.
In a box in the attic that nobody will ever find.
Right? Mm-hmm.
How about the 1957 Studebaker Golden Hawk hardtop? Tierra Gold and white over gold. This thing is maybe the finest Studebaker Golden Hawk I've ever seen.
It's a good one.
It really is.
I've seen it.
The guy did a frame off restored, rebuilt 289 cubic inch, 275 horse supercharged V8, and the Flight-O-Matic. It sounds like you're running from something. Automatic transmission. Only 4,300 of these built.
And not all of them were gold, but this one is spectacular.
And even though it's called a Golden Hawk, they weren't all gold. That wasn't the name of the
car. But you want a gold one.
Right.
You kind of want a gold one. Yeah. They're just so unique. The body style is just wild. And
It's one of those ones that when you were younger in the hobby, you probably wouldn't have looked at or thought much about or thought that was anything cool. But the more you see that car and that particular model and you really learn to appreciate the design on it. You learn to appreciate the rarity of it.
Yeah.
And that it was fast.
And we've had our fair share of modded Studebakers.
Sure.
This one is pure and very,
they
very
just
nice.
Had a question on Jeopardy just last night. It was a car category, and they had actually Packard made the Hawk first.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Packard, Studebaker and Packard were both the makers of the Hawk. And then I don't know what year that changed, probably 56 or 58. Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
I think it was 58.
Yeah. But a wonderful car, and you certainly would be unique at any show or meet that you go to.
Unless you go to a Studebaker show. And they're pretty active.
Or a Golden Hawk Studebaker show, particularly.
Very active Studebaker clubs around the country.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Also new, the 67 Austin Healey 3000 Mark III Roadster, Colorado red and black over black interior. And this is well-restored, dual SUs. Carbs, four-speed manual with overdrive, which is nice to have because especially if you're cruising down the highway.
Yeah.
A fifth gear is desperately needed in a lot of cars. Just want to just jam it up. Can you make your own fifth gear if you jam it hard enough?
Sure you could.
Just push it into.
You try that on yours.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
I don't have a man. Oh, yeah, I do. I have a Porsche manual.
That's it. There you go. Try for seventh gear.
All right. Well, yes.
Yeah, we'll follow you and pick up the pieces.
Thank
yeah,
exactly. you. I appreciate you guys are so kind. Last but not least, the 69 Jaguar XKE 2+2 Coupe. Carmen red over tan. It's a project car. Mm-hmm. This is a drivable project. And I recommend if you're going to do a project car, find something that's got a really solid body and that's drivable. Enjoy it for a little bit of time and then restore it. Because if you don't and you buy it and it in a boxes, 3 years later, you're going to sell the project because you got tired of it and you got bored with it. And so this one's drivable. You use it, take the kids, go get ice cream, use it for, a, you know, 6 months or a year or 2 years.
100%.
And then, you know, then rebuild it and do what you want to do. I mean, Enzo Ferrari said the sexiest, no, the most beautiful car ever built was the XKE Jaguar.
Right.
So it's not necessarily the coupe. He may have meant more the roadster.
That's a famous quote.
A very famous quote that who knows if it's true. It's like when Henry Ford said that, all you know, you can have the Model T in any color as long as it's black. I don't know.
That's right.
Now, I'm not really sure if that actually happened or not.
But. You're going to talk about the Concourse later, but that was a Jaguar-focused.
The cool kids were cars. The featured mark was Jaguar. Mm-hmm. And I got a little heavy-handed with the paddle down there.
For the auction.
The charity auction. Nice. Yes, I have a helmet that is so cool. This helmet was signed by all the – where is that? Here somewhere. All the National Hot Rod Association members countdown to the championship drivers in 2009 in Top Fuel Dragster and Funny Car.
Wow.
So Doug Kalita signed it, Robert Height, Bob Taskin, Del Worsham, Ashley Force Hood, John Force, Spencer Massey, Corey McLenathan, Ron Capps, Morgan Lucas, Tony Pedregan, Tony Schumacher. I mean, all these guys that signed this thing. And I'm not a huge drag racing guy, but it was so cool.
And speaking of John Force.
Kind of in the news.
That's what I was just getting ready to say. John Force, horrible accident last weekend and hit the wall at over 300 miles an hour. I didn't ever see the parachute come out either.
No. I don't think it did.
And
it may have malfunctioned.
Yeah, 75 years old, and he climbed out of there on
amazing.
His own accord.
God
and, of course, they've changed those bodies on those funny cars where they don't blow off like they used to because, A, the body was blown off into the stands, which may have
that
caused a little
bad.
Damage.
Yeah.
But then they strapped him down a little bit. But if you noticed on, if you watched that, the fire was contained into the cockpit way longer than you would normally or think that maybe it's just seemed longer because you're watching it in
slow motion.
And they got that thing and the whole body's just shifting and going, but man.
It was really a flash of fire, but in slow motion, it went on for like 30 seconds. You're like, wow, that's a lot of fire.
He hit the wall and then went all the way across the track and hit the left side, or the driver's side, or not the driver's
so
side.
So if he hit 300, he hits the wall. He's probably still doing 250.
By the time he hits the other wall.
Yeah. If it were a standard two-passenger car, it became a one-passenger car.
Yeah, very quickly.
Or zero for that.
Anyway, he's still in the ICU up in Virginia. Yeah, so, you know, blessings and thoughts and all that with the family. And for him, and you know, just a great, likable guy in the sport. What a probably the biggest ambassador to the sport since Don Garlitz or Kenny Bernstein. And, you know, one of the names I noticed on there too was what was it? Brandon Bernstein. I'm wondering that must be Kenny Bernstein.
Probably,
son.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, if your name is Bernstein and you're in drag racing, then
can't be too many.
I can't think that there's more than a handful.
Sure.
In there. So, got that at the Cool Cars for Kids. A couple more jackets have entered the Howden household, and a wonderful photograph of Steve McQueen at Sebring that taken by our friend Harry Hirsch.
Oh, right.
And Harry's, you know, one of our dear friends and helps run the Simeone Museum down in Philly, and if you haven't been there, it's such a cool place.
We're going to set up a little gallery room here just of your collectibles.
We should,
because your office is full.
We've got another museum. Yes, it's ridiculous. And we'll talk about another museum coming up in segment two. We've got our special guest from the New England Racing Museum, Tom Nedishin, and we will talk to Tom when we come back from our break. We'll see you in just a minute.
The Classic Auto Mall is located not far from Audubon, Pennsylvania, named after James Audubon, the famous ornithologist. And there's probably no better place for bird watching. Look there, a flock of thunderbirds. Of course, who doesn't love the powerful firebirds? Studebaker lark and hawks, Buick skylarks, plus AMC eagle, and the difficult-to-catch roadrunner. Oh, there's no better place for bird watching than Classic Auto Mall.
When it comes to car magazines, are you tired of reading about mega-dollar collector cars you can't afford, or endless reporting on auctions and how-to tech stories that don't interest you? Then Crankshaft is the car magazine for you. Crankshaft is a 144-page softcover quarterly filled with all sorts of fascinating stories, the type of car features you won't find anywhere else. It features American and foreign cars, pre- and post-war era cars of distinction including sports cars, muscle cars, and regular family sedans too. To discover what many car enthusiasts are saying is the best car magazine ever published, you can purchase either a single copy for $12.95 plus $3 postage, or a one-year subscription, four issues, for $59.95. To order your copy, go to www.crankshaftmagazine.com. That's www.crankshaftmagazine.com.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Joining us via Zoom from up in the New England part of the world, Tom Nettishan, the executive director of the New England Racing Museum. Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Man, the background, is your office up on a podium in the pedestal in the museum? That's amazing. I love that view.
Yeah. We have a lot of cars inside the museum. Over 25 different race cars, about 10 motorcycles on display. We're all about New England motor racing.
Sure. How cool is that? And it was, the museum opened in 2017, did I read?
Right, June of 2017. We opened up. They initially started fundraising in 2011. And we are a nonprofit organization. We're actually on the grounds of the New Hampshire Motor Speedway, but we are a completely independent nonprofit. We're a pretty small museum, two employees, myself and a development director and, unpaid board of directors. And we really rely on a volunteer staff to operate the museum.
Well, and it was long overdue to have that museum, right? I mean, there's just so much history in New England with racing and whether it's all kinds of racing, right? I mean, from.
Absolutely. Yeah. We actually, the first race in New England was 1896 in Narragansett Park in Cranston, Rhode Island. It was actually the second motor race in the entire country and the first race on an oval track. A lot of people think, oval track racing started, at Indianapolis or down south, but the first oval track race on a fairgrounds horse track was in Cranston, Rhode Island in 1896.
Wow. And a lot of guys from the South would fight you on that, thinking that that can't be possibly true. But, yeah. People don't realize that the history of motorsports, in New England and even, all of this northeastern part of the world, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York. I mean, this is racing country around here. And I don't think people totally understand that until you've experienced or been here.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that's what our job is. We are an educational nonprofit. So everything we do ties back to educational purposes. Our mission is to, discover, preserve, and educate the public on the history of motor racing in New England. So that everything ties back to learning at the New England Racing Museum.
And you mentioned you're on the grounds of the Speedway there, right? I mean, that's very cool.
Yeah. We're just south of the Speedway, directly on Route 106, which the track is located on. There's actually a neat little quarter-mile dirt track. I just had sprint car and midget racing just take place. That's kind of a prelim event they have on Fridays. We're directly behind that. So, sure. Yeah, we're right on the grounds, around the ground.
Sure. And I bet you can hear them when they're practicing, when you're hard at work thinking, boy, I wish I was out there watching that.
Oh, yeah. My brother competed in the midget race that last Friday. So when I was done work, I just scooted off to the track and helped him with his car on Friday night there.
Have you done some racing yourself?
Not much, right. Just karting when I was younger, but, my family has a race team, open wheel racing, super modifieds, midgets, across, for the past about, 17 years or so.
Oh,
we've
wow.
raced across New England. Had a win at Oswego Speedway in New York a couple years ago and, I race at Thompson, Lee, Star, and, all across the New England region.
Yeah, it's funny how many people you meet that are in this hobby in at levels you don't really hear about as much, but they're equally as involved. I mean, it's a whole family affair and the whole weekend and trucks and trailers and parts and pit crew and the whole thing.
Yeah, it's really a lifestyle.
Sure.
Motor racing when you compete, especially when you're kind of the amateur level, you work all week and then a lot of your weekends throughout the summer, you're going racing and you're preparing each night, dedicated in the shop, a lot of people say, the races are won in the shop, preparation, right?
Right.
Preparing a car in the garage, making sure the setup's right, your motor's tuned, you're ready to go. When you go to the track, you unload on race day, you're ready to go. You're not messing around with the car at the track, you're focused on racing at that point.
Sure. And there's a lot of money in it, right? Just kidding.
Yeah, if you have trouble, no. I say people, it's an expensive. What is what's it all about? I say it's a really expensive hobby.
Yes, absolutely. What you guys are celebrating, and that's awesome, because a lot of what you have celebrated in the museum, I can see the cars behind you, are people that are famous in the racing world, but maybe not as well known in the real world. And it's nice to be able to educate people about guys like that who had impact. I mean, there's some serious racers that are kind of under the radar from that part of the world.
Sure. You know, we have Legends Day coming up this year on November 17th. Each year we honor a segment of different types of racing. You know, we've done stock car racing in the past, super modified racing, midget racing. This year is New England, honoring New England road racers.
Oh,
yeah, so we have some pretty heavy hitters in New England. Lime Rock Park is a world-renowned course in Connecticut, and a couple of our honorees are very closely tied to that track.
Sure.
Skip Barber, longtime owner of Lime Rock Park and of the Skip Barber Racing School fame. He's since stepped back and sold the school and whatnot.
Sure.
He's involved in the sport, and Sam Posey, Indy 500 starter, F1 starter. Sports car racer, broadcaster. I mean, he's kind of done it all. Sam Posey.
Sure.
He'll be one of our honorees this year. Janet Guthrie, who she's not from New England, but she really got her start road racing at Lime Rock Park.
Sure.
At the Thompson Road Course at Briar in New Hampshire. Before New Hampshire Motor Speedway, there was Briar Motorsports Park. So that she has deep roots there. And that was all before she went to Indianapolis. In 1977, she became the first woman to compete in the Indianapolis 500.
Wow.
Obviously, a huge deal.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that she was the first woman. That's right. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. So she really is a, industry groundbreaker. We want to honor her and let people know that, she has New England roots. Got her career start here, her amateur career, before she got picked up with her sponsors and went pro. She worked in the cars. She was hands on. She didn't just show up at the racetrack. I mean, sure. She really earned her way to Indianapolis.
Sure.
The other honorees at Rob and Chris Dyson, 1997, 1999, 24 hours of Daytona winners. Rob Dyson is actually the chairman of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum. He is leading a $90 million renovation of that museum. That museum has actually been closed since last fall.
That's right. That's right. How'd you like to have like 10% of that, right? man. It's, yeah, people don't realize how difficult it is to run a museum. And when you're constantly, very rarely do admissions cover the cost of operating a museum. And so you're constantly battling to get money and funding and all that. And it's relentless. It just doesn't stop. You can't take a day off, Steve. No. Sorry.
You got to be diverse in what you do. Yeah.
Sure.
People think you kind of just open the doors and people come in. Admission only covers about 10 to 15% of our annual budget.
Right.
So we got to be creative. That's why we have events like Legends Day. We have car shows throughout the year. We have a race car show in the spring. We had 82 historic race cars on the grounds of our parking lots, in early May. We have a street car show that's coming up on, August 24th. It's called Hot Rods, Muscle and More. It'll be the sixth time we've done that, the sixth annual of that event. And, we have a really big trophy we give out, the Parker Corain Trophy. There's a perpetual trophy inside the museum. So when you win that car show, you have a trophy inside the museum. It's got your name on it each year. So we try to make it a big deal for the people that come and support us.
Oh, that's so awesome. And just, yesterday, June the 28th, you had a really cool thing happen there. The Great Race made a stop.
Yeah, the Great Race came to town. We had 140 participants. It's a driver and navigator. Come to town, had fantastic weather, a great turnout,
Sure.
It's a unique event that doesn't return every year. We hope to have them back in the future. And, it definitely, brings, each one of the events we do kind of brings a different crowd. The race car show, those are the race enthusiasts. The hot rod, muscle car, that's a different crowd. The Great Race, that's kind of a road rally, antique, high end sort of car crowd. So we try to do, we don't put all our eggs in one basket.
Well, yeah, smart, because if you did, you'd be in real trouble, right?
Something goes wrong, and then we try to be diverse in what we do, and our fundraising efforts are diverse, and that's kind of a sound strategy for a museum. You do different things throughout the year.
And you were talking about Sam Posey and his involvement in road racing and from that part, or lived in that part of the world. I learned something interesting about him. He learned to drive on his grandfather's estate in a 300 SL Mercedes, and his racing instructor was John Fitch. I mean, you better go to Formula One. You better go to Indy if you've got that kind of background, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, John Fitch was instrumental in the design of Lime Rock Park.
Sure.
We have a nice display on John inside the museum. Inside the museum too, we cover all different types of racing. Sometimes we get a kind of a stigma. Oh, it's a NASCAR museum because we're on the track. Not true. Right. We are motor racing. We cover road racing, drag racing, oval, dirt, motorcycle. Anything with a motor falls under our umbrella, let's call it. And the cars on display, we have a very diverse range of cars. And that's my job to make sure we're not too heavy in one area.
Right.
We're not too light in one area. We got to have a little bit of everything. We actually rotate the cars. About half the cars we rotate on an annual basis.
That's great.
And about 80% of the cars are on loan. So that it's done by design. So we can change it up. So our goal is for you to come to the New England Racing Museum once a year. And when you come up with the NASCAR race or one of our events, or you're up at the Lakes region in New Hampshire, tourism is huge in New Hampshire. It's number one industry throughout the state. The White Mountains, the Lakes region of New Hampshire. We want you to come up and check out what's new at the New England Racing Museum when you're on your summer trip up to the region.
Well, a lot of museums made the mistake of having static displays for years and years and years and years and years and couldn't figure out why they couldn't draw people to come to it, and they realized that they were getting no repeat business. Yeah. And, of course, when you have the NASCAR race there, it brings in, 90,000 people, I think, attend that race or something?
About 50,000 now.
Right.
In its heyday, the capacity was about 90,000, or that's about 20 years ago at this point.
How bad of an impact did it have when NASCAR went from 2-1 race in that area? It had to have a huge financial impact on the area.
It did. It did. You got to think about hotels, restaurants, even attractions like us. We were kind of just opening up when that happened, so we weren't really dependent on it. And again, since our fundraising, we're not dependent on NASCAR. It's a great fundraiser, and we do very well, but we're not solely dependent on it.
Sure.
So we're diverse. But yeah, it's a big economic driver, no doubt, when you bring 50,000 people to a region. That's a lot of revenue.
Sure. Well, and NASCAR is a completely different animal than it was back when it started. I mean, they were looking for tracks back then, and now that doesn't seem to be a problem. They're going a little bit of everywhere.
They're doing road racing and the streets of Chicago. I hear Mexico City is a high probability for next year.
It probably makes sense. Yeah.
First international race since 1958. So they're trying to expand their horizons, which I understand. I think we're hearing potentially the race could be moving back to the fall time next year at New Hampshire.
Oh, wow. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. That was reported from Jordan Bianchi, pretty respectable reporter. It's going to be in the NASCAR playoffs for the first time in many years.
Cool.
This is not official, but looking likely. And that's a really fantastic time for the region.
You heard it here first, folks.
if it does return to the fall, there's no better time to come to New England in the fall time. People around the country and the globe come to New England for the fall foliage. So hopefully it coincides with that, and we have a really great crowd.
Sure, Tom. We'll be back with the Classic Auto Mall show in just a minute.
If you want to see exciting fish, insects, and reptiles, you'll want to visit the Classic Auto Mall. Where else can you see hornets, honeybees, super bees, living in peace and harmony with stingrays, barracudas, tiburon, which means sharks, cobras and vipers, as well as beetles. And we don't mean the band. So if you come to Classic Auto Mall, you can see everything there is to see for free, and we won't bug you.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than six decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/awr. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/awr. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Join us on our website if you get a chance, ClassicAutoMall.com. And if you have any questions or concerns or complaints, send them to Steve at, no, podcast at ClassicAutoMall.com, and we'll be sure to respond to them in a very timely manner. Tom Nedishin, the executive director of the New England Racing Museum, is joining us from New Hampshire this morning. Is it hot or cold? Are you getting a heat wave up there, too, or is it?
Heat wave door. That was last week. Yeah,
You guys are not used to that kind of weather, right?
You know, it happens. It happens. Yeah, when it gets hot, it's usually very, very humid and very, very uncomfortable. But this week is much, much better than last week. High 80s, a low humidity. You know, tomorrow, you know, it's going to be great weather.
Yeah, was the race, the NASCAR race, was it, did it during the heat wave? Or was it hotter than heck there?
It was kind of actually at the tail end, and they got a lot of rain. Thunderstorms. Yeah, there was delay at the dirt track on Friday, and they had to move some of the races around. Actually, the NASCAR modified race went off at 10:30 a.m. They got it off in the morning on Saturday, but it was supposed to be in the afternoon on Saturday, and that wasn't going to happen because they had 80% chance of rain. So
they got
everything. They actually ran wet weather tires at the tail end of the NASCAR Cup Series race to get it in. They started the race on dry, and they made it to halfway. You know, once a NASCAR race gets to halfway, it is official.
Right.
But since this wet weather tire deal has come on the past couple of years, they said, you know, they want to finish the race for the fans, live in audience and on television. I think that the lap time slowed down about 2 or 3 seconds. No, because they're dancing around the track. They don't run them in the rain, but once the rain stopped, they'll run them. And they did get the race in, you know, they complete the race at length. And that track doesn't have light, so you got to, you know, this is a good time of year to have a race later in the afternoon because it stays light up to about 8:30. That's about when they wrapped up, a little after 8 o'clock.
Well, I always thought if Formula One cars can run in the rain, then surely NASCAR cars can figure out how to run in the rain as well, too. So it's nice to see that they're doing that because I'm with you. If the fans are braving it out and sticking it out with the ponchos on, and by golly, let's get some racing done. Nobody wants to see half a race and then their, you know, least favorite driver wins.
That's why you buy a ticket, right?
Yeah, exactly. You don't
want people coming back.
Rain or shine. And isn't Joey Logano from your part of the world as well, too?
He is, yeah. We actually, he's from Connecticut. We actually have his 2018 NASCAR Cup Series Roger Penske car in the museum.
Oh, nice.
And if you remember, that is the car that he won at Martinsville, racing Martin's Truex Jr. Right. Pretty rough. The car's beat up. It's got rubber down the side, donuts in the side of it. And he actually won in Martinsville, and that projected him into the Final Four for the NASCAR playoffs. And he won his first championship in 2018 back at Homestead Miami Speedway. So, yeah, we got that car on display. That's a big hit. Especially during NASCAR weekend.
Sure. And if you met him in an airport, the last thing you would guess he'd do is being a NASCAR driver. He just doesn't look like the prototypical NASCAR driver. He's a heck of a driver. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And yeah, a lot of them are looking that way. You know, that's kind of next generation's kind of coming through in NASCAR. You know, you had Kevin Harvick retire last year and, you know, there's not too many, left that have really been there. I have a real, real long tenure. You have this kind of, new generation and kind of in a transition, so to speak.
Sure.
Great guy, you know, great supporter of the museum. Joey Logano, definitely his home track up here at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, right on the site of the museum.
And you wonder where the next generation of stars will come from in NASCAR. Will it be, you know, somebody who comes over from a different discipline, or will it be some new kid who's, you know, the Tiger Woods of, boy, that makes me sound old when I say that. The Tiger Woods of NASCAR, right? I mean, is there anybody on the horizon that's going to be that guy, you think?
Hard to tell at the moment. I know dirt track racing across the country, and we're talking about oval track racing. Dirt track racing is doing very well. You have the likes of Kyle Larson and the winner, who actually won the NASCAR Xfinity race on Saturday and the NASCAR Cup Series race, Christopher Bell. He's a dirt guy.
Right.
Midget racer, sprint car racer. I think there's a lot of dirt racing that happens, not really specifically in New England, but, you know, Pennsylvania, the Ohio River Valley, Indiana, California, even down south with the late models. There's a lot of dirt racing. They bring big crowds. And at the end of the day, a motor race really,
yeah,
it's about the on-track product, right? The excitement sells the ticket.
Sure. Well, yeah. No different than drag racing. I mean, if the only place you ever saw drag racing was on television, you go, eh, that doesn't seem that great until you go there and you experience the fumes and the sound and the thunder and the, you know, sure. The whole nine yards, you know.
Your organs are shaking on the starting line. At
so your kidney doing a little bit of a dance inside you, you know.
I call it sensory overload.
It absolutely is. It's amazing. Now, at one time, you probably don't still have it. You had a Duesenberg in there. What was the connection of the Duesenberg that was in the museum?
Yeah, the Duesenberg was a really interesting car. That was from, I believe it was 1912. That raced on the board track. In Salem, New Hampshire, there is a professional board track. These would be the stars of the Indianapolis 500 of the day.
Right.
That ran from about 1922 to 1926. Pretty short tenure on the board track. But that ran there. Didn't want to race there, but it did run there. It won at Middletown, the dirt track down there. It won on the fairgrounds. It ran there in Middletown, New York. But yeah, that was an interesting period example of kind of a forgotten era of board track racing and big car or racing of the day, as they call them, two seaters. Now you had a ride on mechanic in those days that would be right. Your spotter in the car and a checking your gauges. And, sometimes even you got to slow down and open the hood and see what's going on there.
Leaning out up over there. And yeah,
it happened. That Duesenberg, it's still around. It's owned by one of our board members, Joe Freeman. He takes it around the country. It's still actively, driving on, going to concourses and driving in rallies, stuff like that.
He
likes to stretch the legs on that car. So we had it for a period of time, but it's out running again.
Sure, sure. And do you still have your slot car track in there?
Yeah, we have a slot car track, the 4-lane slot car track. The kids love that and adults love it. We have an iRacing simulator. Courtesy of the folks down in iRacing in Bedford, Massachusetts. iRacing is, in New England. That's their home base. Sure. So we have that. And so we have, and we actually have a really interesting display. It's a digital track map. And what it is it's the six New England states, and you click on it, and there's basically icons across it. You can click the icons, and you can learn about all the tracks across the region that are currently active and non-active. Unfortunately, most of them are inactive.
Right.
I think there's about 256 racetracks that have been in the New England region.
And wow.
Kind of a surprise to a lot of people. Massachusetts had 56 tracks at one point. I think they're down to two. New Hampshire has the most tracks. We have about, I think there's about 12 active racetracks in New Hampshire.
That's a lot, right?
Yeah. New Hampshire definitely has the most. A lot of short track racing. We have a little bit of everything. We have drag racing that has a national event with New England Dragway and Epping. We have New Hampshire Motor Speedway. There's different, some sports car clubs, tracks throughout the region, a lot of short oval tracks, throughout quarter miles, 3/8. There's quite a bit of racing that still goes on in the region. And the problem, not a lot of dirt racing because it's a lot of sand and rock up here. interesting fact, the track behind us at the, New Hampshire Motor Speedway, they actually had to truck the dirt from the Connecticut River. In Vermont to the track because the local dirt, it's all sand.
It just doesn't work, yeah.
It doesn't hold together. It doesn't bind together. So
right.
And that's what makes dirt track racing a little bit challenging in the region. So there's not a lot that goes on throughout here.
Well, and the other thing that happens up in New England a whole lot is tours. Whether it's a, organized tour or 10 guys get together with their buddies and map out a tour they're going to take or organized rallies and things like that because it's just a beautiful part of the world, right?
Yeah, and especially in the fall time, we have the, British car clubs come in. We have all sorts of Corvette clubs are coming in. They're calling us and they're basically heading to the Lakes region of the White Mountains and they'll stop in. And we have a great group rate. If you have 20 or more people, it's $10.
Oh, awesome.
General admission usually for us is $15. So if you have a car club or group, we welcome them to come to the museum and check us out. And, throughout the summer months, the museum is open Saturdays and Sundays at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. During NASCAR week and special events, hours will be posted on our website, but you can see us, pretty much, from beginning of June to mid October. As soon as the leaves fall off the trees, things start to quiet down in our region.
Yeah.
We are open year round though. We are open Saturdays, 10 to 4 year round once the, we call it the summer season is over.
Right, right. And, you get some serious snow up there in the wintertime, right? I mean, it's not,
The past couple of years hasn't been too crazy. The White Mountains region has a lot of skiing and,
sure.
They actually raced on ice A lot of people don't know that on Lake Winnipesaukee in the wintertime, in February, when kind of the midwinter, so to speak, they have, they put treads on sprint cars and stock cars. They actually hold races on the ice. They out there. And we actually have one of those cars in the museum. One of our volunteers, Alan Dara, his car is inside the museum. People are looking at it. What the heck is with the chains on the side? Like, oh, yeah, this race on Lake Winnipesaukee. So it's kind of a curiosity.
That would be fun, I think. Racing on ice. That would be, you got it. Your skill set better be pretty good.
It'll be on top of the wheel. And it's also the visibility, too, sometimes, because you've got snow flying everywhere.
Exactly.
This car's got three windshield wipers on it.
Right. Of course. Why not? And then you've got a Hall of Fame thing going there, too, right, with Mike Joy is a member, and Ken Squire.
Yeah, we don't officially call it a Hall of Fame.
Oh, gotcha.
There is another Hall of Fame already that was established in the 80s in New England. So we call it Legends Day.
Sure.
And, you know, we each year we have different legends, and we've done stock cars, super modifieds, midgets, and we're going to do road racing this year. That's November 17th. Tickets will be on sale soon. And that's kind of our premier event every year. You know, I tell people the museum is a passion project. Everyone that supports the museum is passionate about racing across the New England region. Whether you're a driver, an owner, a fan, a crew chief, or someone who is a track owner, or someone who is involved intricately in the sport, that's our supporters. Those are our people. Sure. We call it racing people, let's call it. And Legends Day is our chance to honor different segments of those, different segments of different types of racing. And what it is they go on stage and they have a Q&A session. Talk about their early years, their careers. It's always hosted by kind of someone who is an industry expert this year. It's going to be hosted by the announcer of Lime Rock Park, who knows a lot of these people and knows them well. Sam Posey, Skip Barber, Janet Guthrie, Rob Dyson, Chris Dyson, Giacomo Jr. and Senior are going to be our honorees. And at the end of the event, we actually have banners that we raise, permanent banners that go up, kind of like, it was actually, the inspiration was the Boston Garden.
Sure.
The event was started by, race promoter Russ Conway, unfortunately since passed away, a couple years ago, but, he kind of wanted to, pay a tribute to the Boston Garden where you look up and you're in the museum, you see all these banners.
It reminds you of that.
Yeah. Has their likeness on it, shot of them and kind of some of their major, career accomplishments. We unveil those banners at the end of the event.
Awesome. And, that's quite a lineup of people to come up your way too.
Yeah. This year's going to be pretty special, with, the road racers, Sam Posey, Indy 500,
legendary, yeah.
Indy 500 road racing, F1, Skip Barber of Lime Rock fame, kind of the nuts and bolts of road racing.
Sure.
If you think of Skip Barber and Janet Guthrie got her career started here.
Sure.
With racing across the region as well. And Rob and Chris Dyson, some of the most successful business people in the entire country.
Sure.
Road racing and still racing today. Still happening today.
Absolutely.
Trans Am. I think they were at Lime Rock, earlier this month racing. And Giacomo Maggiacomo Senior and Junior. A little bit of interesting, Giacomo Maggiacomo, his real name was Chauncey.
Right.
Jocko is a nickname.
He
was oval track racing and road racing. He won, I think it was a 500 lap feature event at Riverside Park Speedway and a stock car in the 1950s.
That's too far.
Yeah. It's pretty extreme.
Sure.
But his son was involved with, he raced NASCAR a bit and road raced. So there's some crossover there with the road racing and oval track racing. So a great lineup, an interesting lineup. And, the Maggiacomo Sun team and the Dyson Sun team, they'll be honored on a banner together. They can have a family banner inside the museum, and Guthrie, Barber and Posey will have their independent banner. So yeah, we're pretty excited. It's going to be a great event. Again, that is, November 17th. Tickets will be on sale soon. NERmuseum.com and New England Racing Museum. There's only one, so you can't miss us.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being on the show, Tom. We really appreciate it and hope you have a great day.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Are you bored with your commute? Listless in your lane, and you don't even have the get up and go on green? 9 out of 10 doctors recommend Classic Auto Mall to cure the common drive. The Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, PA is a veritable classic car supermarket with classics of all prices, types, and years. So if you need a cure for the common drive, check out Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown or ClassicAutoMall.com. Side effects include not wanting to come home, going to car hop drive-ins, recenter your fingernails, old car smell, and bias ply bias.
When it comes to car magazines, are you tired of reading about mega-dollar collector cars you can't afford, or endless reporting on auctions and how-to tech stories that don't interest you? Then Crankshaft is the car magazine for you. Crankshaft is a 144-page softcover quarterly filled with all sorts of fascinating stories, the type of car features you won't find anywhere else. It features American and foreign cars, pre- and post-war era cars of distinction including sports cars, muscle cars, and regular family sedans too. To discover what many car enthusiasts are saying is the best car magazine ever published, you can purchase either a single copy for $12.95 plus $3 postage, or a one-year subscription, four issues, for $59.95. To order your copy, go to www.crankshaftmagazine.com. That's www.crankshaftmagazine.com.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday, 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
What a nice guy. Tom Nettishin, executive director of the New England Racing Museum. Go check that place out. It sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of vintage racing goes on up. A lot of my guys go up to Lime Rock and Thompson. Sure. Well, not Thompson, Lime Rock, and do a lot of great racing.
Yeah.
Still going on.
It's this part of the world. There's way more racing stuff going on than I ever realized. Mm-hmm. When you don't spend time in an area much, you don't always know the little intricacies and things that about it. And so to find these things out after the fact was a blessing for me, because had this been a non-car part of the world, I would have been in deep doo-doo.
Empty mall.
Yeah, nice empty mall and no cars and no people coming in. Yeah, to go, Stuart.
Yeah. And Vermont and New Hampshire and really Maine are almost, they're like the size of Delaware. So
right.
Tour a lot of places. It's not, I hit three states in one day.
Yeah,
it's like,
I meant to ask him, though, do they get tired of the New England lumping of, everything is New England. It's not Rhode Island. Nobody has their own identity up there. It's all New England. Yeah. So, the New England Patriots are the team.
And yeah.
I didn't say go Celtics to him either. So,
right.
I should have said that. What was I missing? I don't know.
You've said it now.
Well, it's on record, right?
That's right.
And you may wonder why I have this hat on today. Well, this is because of my beloved Tennessee Volunteers, or Vols, Steve, instead of Vols, whatever you say.
Vols is a better name.
No, Vols has meaning. It's volunteers, and they volunteered. There was more volunteers for the Army back in the day from Tennessee than anywhere else. And we saved this country.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Certainly are now the World Series champion Tennessee Volunteer baseball team. How cool is that?
Uh-huh.
And they were in Omaha last weekend, and they beat Texas A&M 2-1.
Yeah, they didn't celebrate very much.
No parade or anything in downtown Knoxville today.
Did they have to grease the light poles?
Yes, they did.
Did they really?
It looked like
a
ticker tape parade. For the astronauts coming back that landed on the moon in 1960. I mean, it
allegedly landed on the moon.
Yeah, that new movie is coming out that says they didn't.
So. A lot of questions.
There's a lot of questions, Mr. C. Theorist, spirit.
Yeah, you get a lot of that on TikTok. Speaking of TikTok, if I could just say we hit a milestone, that Oldsmobile hit a million views yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's pretty
crazy.
Cool. And we're just about 60,000 followers on TikTok. Follow us there and every other avenue of social media and YouTube.
So if we could start another one of those and call it Talk Tick, would that be an infringement of their
No.
whatever?
No.
So
But all the cars have to back up. We have to all be in reverse.
That's true. So we were talking about the Cool Cars for Kids event last weekend at the Simeon. It was a really amazing turnout. Jaguar was the featured mark. And some great people down there. They had some great turnout. The silent auction was once again expensive to me, but now I have four of the coolest
top
jackets.
Top bidder, Stuart Howden.
I have two Shelby jackets.
Yeah.
One signed by Chuck Cantwell, Pete Brock, and Roy Schoberg. And then the one I got the other night signed by Chuck Cantwell.
Oh, nice.
And then I got a Jaguar team jacket, which is really cool.
Was Chuck down there?
Helmet. Yeah, Chuck was there. And then I got the helmet and then the print from Harry Hurst.
So nice.
It was a lot of fun. And, but anyway, hats off to my beloved Vols. Thank you guys so much. We needed a national championship because my wife was wondering if Tennessee was ever anything of anything.
Wow, we're watching this again.
Sports. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Was it on television?
No.
was it that important?
No, it wasn't on television. It was on AM radio. We gathered around the fireplace with the AM radio. We had a pot of beans.
I used to listen to the radio with Vince Scully back in the day.
Well, 860 AM.
In Tennessee football times, when John Ward was the announcer, one of the greatest football announcers in the world, everybody would turn the volume down on the TV and turn the volume up on the radio. Of course, the problem is that he embellished the touchdowns a little bit. He'd go, and now he's on the 10, 9, 8. He's already scored.
Already
7, 6, 5, 4. And then his big thing was, give him 6. So just exciting. And the parade they had was just amazing down in Knoxville. That was last night. And it was just, it's an exciting time because, you know, Tennessee has, you know, great football team, great basketball team, great baseball team, great women's basketball team.
Yeah.
But had a tough time in the latter years, winning anything. So, or anything of real significance. So, nice that they did and, hats off to them and,
shout out.
Go Vols.
Go Vols. So I was doing my research on one of the cars that we had featured this week and I got thinking about colors and names.
Yeah.
And all the cool names and colors that are out there. And first one came up was British Racing Green because that's just as iconic, I think, as maybe any color there is. I mean, I think if you say that color to anybody in the car world, they know exactly what you're talking
about. Registration Green?
No, British Racing.
Oh, British Racing Green. I heard Registration Green.
Wait a minute,
green.
Are your headphones working?
I'm looking on the list. I'm like, where? Registration Green. How come I don't know that color?
British Racing Green.
I gotcha.
Everybody knows what that is. But everybody might not know what B5 Blue is,
right,
which is a really dynamic blue color on Mopar products from back in the day.
Okay.
And Mulsanne Blue, which was on Camaros and it was that kind of that icy blue. They called it Hugger Orange.
Bright Orange.
Yeah. Plum Crazy.
Everybody.
Acapulco Blue.
That's right.
Sublime.
Sublime.
Sublime. Yeah,
Sublime.
Sublime.
I'm not going to repeat everything you say.
It sounds like you are. Bastard Amber. No, that's...
that's really on here.
Yeah. No, I wrote this. Of course I know that. It's on there. Bastard Amber was the color of a gel in Concert World. And it was kind of a yellowish, orangish color, and it was actually called Bastard Amber.
Really?
So I don't know why I threw that in there.
I see. It's not a
car. It's not a car color.
I gotcha.
Go Mango, although Mystic is, and that's not one car color. It's like 27 different colors.
Yes, it is.
Or what was the one, the Volkswagen that was we talked about a couple of weeks ago?
Shoot. The one that came out of the factory with different colors on it.
Yeah. Every panel was different.
I forget what that's called.
And my 72 Firebird was Julep.
Julep.
Yep, like real mint green.
Oh, how about, well, think of some of the elegant names from back in the day. Cotillion White.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Formal Black. Mm-hmm. Tuxedo Black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you got Go Mango, Daytona Blue, Highland Green, Fire Mist, Anthracite, Corvette Bronze, Battleship Great, Black Cherry. That was always an interesting one to me.
The 65 Chevy had a Evening Orchid.
Evening Orchid, yeah. Inferno Orange, Amber Glow. What was the one, the Mustang one? Can't think of thing. Maybe the Amber Glow. Maybe that was it, that kind of bronzy color that they had on those. Candy Apple Red.
Yes.
That may be the most iconic one. Yeah. That was the one that when we went to the car shows. The IHRA, or not the IHRA, but the International Show Circuit vehicles, and you'd see all these wild beatnik bandits and cars with bubble tops and
Mazda
all that.
Mazda has one of the most beautiful candy apple reds right now. They call it a red crystal. Well, mm-hmm. If you look at the SUVs, it's just, oh, God, in the sun, it's gorgeous.
How about lipstick red?
Yep.
How about Guards Red
Guards
on a
red,
Porsche?
Porsche?
Yeah, that was a great color on a 930 Turbo Porsche. Cameo White. And this one isn't a unique one, but it was my mom's favorite, Navy Blue. She said that's the most elegant color for a car of any type. Navy blue just really sets a car off. So Hemi Orange, School Bus Yellow.
Yes.
Interlagos Blue, which was a BMW I had, which is based after the South American racetrack.
Oh, okay.
They called it Interlagos Blue, but I'm not quite sure. Marlboro Maroon was a Corvette color. Nassau Blue, a Corvette color. Lindale Blue, which was the blue that was on that 67 black hardtop Corvette that we had. Mm-hmm. It was gorgeous. It's that steely blue.
Yes, it is.
Marina Blue.
Marina Blue, yes. Old English White. Obsidian Black, that's a Mercedes color. See, I did my homework.
You did a lot.
Let's see. Polo Green. What was that on?
Yeah.
Polo
Corvette.
Green. Oh,
that
right.
Darky greeny with a tan top.
Kind of like British Racing Green.
Arrest Me Red.
Arrest Me Red.
Pull Me Over Red. Sassy Green. Saturn Yellow. How about Tor Red?
Mm-hmm.
Vitamin C. Wimbledon White. Grabber Blue.
And there was a Torch Red, too, I think, Corvettes.
Mm-hmm, there was.
Patina. And primer.
That's it.
Yeah.
Those are our list of.
And what was the color on your motorcycle? Because I thought that was really.
Stonewashed. Stonewashed white.
Stonewashed something
beautiful,
white.
Isn't it a beautiful color?
It really is. It's slightly off white. Like it's stonewashed.
And it's got that just silver accenting on it. To me, it's one of the most elegant motorcycles I've ever seen.
It's a beautiful.
And not just because I have it for sale.
That's right. ClassicAutomall.com. Go to inventory.
Yeah. It's not just because of that.
And it's a Harley, folks.
And it's a Harley, by golly. And, you know, I put 9 miles on it in 2 years. So I got kind of tired of paying the insurance.
Like new condition,
as
we said.
Yeah, less than 400 miles on this.
That's
thing.
Right.
And it's got, you know, original everything. Gas included.
Yeah, really? No. Is that right?
It has new car smell and it's not even a car.
Yeah.
Smell the leather.
What's the interior color? Well, that's just the seat.
Just a black seat.
So, we were talking with, I was talking with a guy who bought a car from us the other day out on the floor and talking about undercarriage photos of cars and how a lot of places you won't see an undercarriage photo of a car because quite candidly, the undercarriage of a car is the least sexy. It's like looking under, you know, you're looking at the lip when you undo your disposal.
Yeah.
And where it attached to the, I mean, it's not a pleasant part of the world.
And it's often ignored.
And a lot of guys have never seen their undercarriage. They'll own a car for 3 or 4 years and have never ever seen it. So they won't know if it's good or bad or.
And very important.
And when you show them, they go, oh, well, I didn't know that. And they probably didn't. Maybe some did. But most didn't because they haven't seen their car on the lift. And we do that for what reason? Obviously, because we want to be honest with people on the condition of a car. And yes, it's not pretty to look at, and it's probably cost of sales. People have probably looked at it, and the bark is worse than its bite. It looks worse than it really is. And so, but we're going to continue to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we want you to see every part of it. We want you to know that we're not hiding anything when it comes to the condition of the car. And because we can miss things, there can be things that don't show up. And one of the things that he and I talked about was the fact that a lot of people look at these cars on their phones only.
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't get a full appreciation of the depth of the pictures on a phone. You look at it on a desktop, on a bigger monitor or screen, you're able to see a lot more detail in the car. So I recommend that if you have the opportunity to do that. Now, this guy said, look, I don't have anything but a cell phone. But if you have the opportunity to do it, look at it on a computer, on a nice high-res computer screen.
Right.
It really will show you lots and lots of things that you probably wouldn't see any other way. So
Eyes wide open
because, you know, certainly important to know what you're getting or not getting.
Mm-hmm.
And then once again, shout out to John Force and wish him a speedy recovery on that accident.
Absolutely.
God bless.
Man. I mean, still in the ICU and just, man, to hit a wall that hard at 75 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can remember 75 years old was nursing home material not that long ago.
That's right.
You know, and all
now
of a
you
sudden,
can be president.
Now you can be president. Oh, he couldn't help that one, could he? No. That was zing. Anyway, we'll catch you next time on the Classic Auto Mall Show. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall Show with your host, Stuart Howden. Executive producer Steve Saffier. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Questions, answers, or comments? Write us at ClassicAutoMall.com. And if you want to talk about buying a classic car seen on our website, you're looking for a particular vehicle, or want to consign your classic for sale, write us at info@ClassicAutoMall.com or call and talk to a real live classic car specialist at 888-227-0914. That's 888-227-0914. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit pattravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.
You are invited on a safari at Classic Auto Mall on a search for animals. Look closely and you might see a tiger, jaguar, and a cheetah or cougar as they try to catch a herd of impalas. And don't forget the wild mustangs and broncos, plus gazelle, rabbits, and rams. Instead of the zoo, you'll want to do your animal watching at Classic Auto Mall. It smells better too.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.